I think it's disgusting that John Bolton got paid $2 million for information he's withheld from the American public.
If you want to do a real study, you actually have to get into what it's like at the treetop level and down on the ground.
He was an interesting and complex character.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. On this episode, Governor Charlie Baker comes to Union Station in Springfield, and we remember Kobe Bryant. But first, New York Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney, a Democrat of the 18th District, is weighing in on the latest development in the impeachment trial of President Trump. It comes after word that former National Security Advisor John Bolton wrote an unpublished account of the president's dealings with Ukraine that undercuts the White House's defense.
I think it's disgusting that John Bolton got paid $2 million for information he's withheld from the American public. I mean, just think about that. This is someone who is supposed to work for us, and he went out and he sold his story for money, and yet he's refusing to reveal what he knows to the Congress. I think that tells you everything you need to know about the kind of values and priorities of this administration. But, of course, it's also the White House that has taken steps to block his testimony. The American public deserves to know what the truth is. They deserve the facts and the documents. These are people who work for the public. These are documents that are created at taxpayer expense. There is no excuse for the Senate not having witnesses and documents, and John Bolton ought to be on the top of the list.
Maloney speaking in Washington Lake on Monday. The restoration of Union Station in Springfield is seen as a catalyst for the increase in rail ridership in western Massachusetts. The project was also the spark for a much-anticipated study into expanded train service for the region. WAMC's Pioneer Valley Bureau Chief Paul Tuthill reports.
Governor Charlie Baker said his administration is the first to undertake a comprehensive feasibility study of what it would cost and what would be the tangible benefits of more frequent and fast passenger trains connecting the western and eastern portions of the state.
It's always nice to talk about things at 60,000 feet, because you can just imagine what they look like on the ground. You don't actually have to find any facts. But if you want to do a real study, you actually have to get into what it's like at the treetop level and down on the ground.
The Republican governor spoke at a ceremony to mark the opening of a new $11 million high-level rail boarding platform at Union Station, the capstone of a $100 million restoration of the historic station. MassDOT's total investment in the project was about $65 million.
To be able to have a conversation about options analysis on East-West, a lot of the investment that we've been making here needed to happen.
After years of trying to get an in-depth study of East-West rail, spearheaded by Democratic State Senator Eric Lesser of Longmeadow, MassDOT agreed in 2018 to finally undertake it. Six options are being studied, including one with a Springfield-Boston travel time of 80 minutes if new track is laid down to connect the two cities. Massachusetts Democratic Congressman Richard Neal, also a proponent of East-West Rail, has repeatedly made the case to Baker that Western Massachusetts deserves a larger share of the state's transportation funds. The new state budget Baker proposed last week calls for a $135 million increase for Boston's MBTA. Speaking with reporters, Baker made it clear he's not going to commit to funding for East-West Rail until the results of the feasibility study are known.
You know, I'm one of these guys who thinks most things are one step at a time, and I try not to get too far ahead of myself on that.
Currently, the only East-West passenger train that stops in Springfield is Amtrak's twice daily Lakeshore Limited. But there are more than a dozen trains that operate on north-south routes with stops in Springfield, and ridership on many of those is booming. CT Rail, which has been operating out of Springfield for 18 months on the newly constructed Hartford line, just reported it had its 1 millionth rider during the Thanksgiving travel season. Neal, who for decades championed the project to restore Union Station, said the success of CT Rail has contributed to the vitality of the newly reopened downtown transportation hub.
When you go through downstairs, you can see what activity does. The facility is 72% rented already.
Springfield Mayor Dominic Sarno said Union Station has proven to be an economic catalyst.
You would not be talking about East-West Rail or improving East-West transportation if it wasn't for Union Station being done.
Built in 1926, Union Station closed in the 1970s as train ridership dwindled. After the multi-year restoration project, it reopened in 2017 as a transportation center for trains and also intercity and PVTA buses. But the boarding platform for trains on the overhead tracks had to be replaced to meet current accessibility regulations. The new Platform C is 328 feet long and includes a canopy roof, new lighting, and electronic message boards. The project included a new stairway and elevator to the passenger waiting area in the train station's main concourse. Reporting from Springfield, this is Paul Tuthill, the WAMC's Pioneer Valley News Bureau, on the campus of Western New England University.
Well, the sports and entertainment worlds are in disbelief after Kobe Bryant, his daughter, and seven others died in a helicopter crash near Los Angeles on Sunday. The surefire Basketball Hall of Famer was 41. One of the biggest stars in NBA history, Bryant leaves behind a sterling legacy on the court and a more complicated but developing one off it. For more about this stunning news, I spoke with WAMC sports commentator Keith Strudler, director of the School of Communication at Montclair State University.
What probably comes to mind the most is the Lakers. He was one of those few stars, and probably the last of his kind, that spent an entire career and a long career as a superstar with a singular franchise. So in many ways, he was kind of the last of a generation, I suppose, that harkens back to Bird and to Magic and other players like that. So I would think of that. And I guess beyond that, I would think of competitiveness. It was hard to imagine a player that had a stronger competitive drive, I suppose Jordan being the exemplar of that. But one of the most interesting stats about Kobe was the number of all-star game MVPs he won. I think it was something like five. It was a crazy number. And he only won one league MVP because he wasn't ever generally the best player in the NBA. He was always, for a long time, one of the best players in the NBA. But the all-star game is one of those games where no one really wants to try hard. But I don't think Kobe had kind of a second gear. Kobe had one gear, and it was always win all the time. And so I think that would be, from an on-court perspective, what I would remember the most about Kobe.
It's also interesting to think back at the beginning of his career. He was coming up in the era when you could still go right from high school to the league. And we know that a lot of people who tried that turned out to be busts, but not Kobe.
Yeah, and so Kobe was a different kind of player. And what was also interesting about Kobe was he was one of the only players that did it that was a guard. I mean, you might make the rationalization that a big guy, Kevin Garnett, could do it because size is something you can't teach and there's certain intangibles. But guard, there's so many skills you need to know. You never know if it's going to really pan out in the NBA. And so he was kind of that, he was the example of how it could work. I would also say that Kobe was uniquely prepared and qualified to enter the adult world of the NBA. Obviously, his father was a very good basketball player. Kobe was far more worldly. He lived in Italy. He spoke a second language. And so, in many ways, the downfall of a lot of athletes that came through high school wasn't simply the skill set, but the lifestyle and the changes that they'd have to go through almost immediately from being very coddled to being really on their own with a lot of money. And Kobe seemed uniquely prepared to handle that because in the end of the day, Kobe had already been around that. He was very smart. He was educated. And he was singularly focused on winning basketball games, which, in some cases made him not everyone's favorite because he could be difficult in that regard. But I think Kobe is, it would be hard to put Kobe up as the example of how it can work for everyone because he was just so different. And I think LeBron, in so many regards, has followed in his footsteps. Obviously, LeBron has moved around from team to team. But LeBron's also a guy who was smart and seems to have kind of stayed out of trouble and stayed focused on winning basketball games. And obviously, there's a bitter kind of irony to the fact that just the day before he passed, LeBron and Kobe had exchanged greetings after LeBron had passed him in the all-time scoring leader to become number three. And so, it's a very sad and kind of meaningful moment.
We often talk to you about the intersection of society and sports. And in these early raw hours, I think a lot of people don't exactly know how to talk about the mixed legacy that Kobe leaves. Clearly one of the great NBA players of all time, but it's been hard to find an obituary today that hasn't made mention of the sexual assault case from the 2003 era and how that sort of casts a shadow on the rest of his career.
It is impossible to tell the story of Kobe Bryant without that part of it. And it did very much change forever his legacy. And it took a long time for, you know, outside of Los Angeles and the diehard sports fans in Los Angeles, you know, reveres Kobe Bryant. But it took a long time for the general public to kind of return to Kobe Bryant as someone they idolized. You know, in many ways, Kobe Bryant was the original sports version of the Truman Show. We really watched him live his life from really when, you know, 16, 17 years old onward for 20 plus years. And so we got to see all of Kobe in all his good and all his bad. And so I think, well, obviously at this time, everyone remembers the high points of Kobe's life and Kobe's career. It is certainly a conflicted legacy leaves. He was an interesting and complex character.
Last thing, Keith, we watched a lot of NBA teams last night really struggling to keep it together. Many of them took shot clock violations of 24 seconds to honor Kobe Bryant, who wore number 24 for much of his career. Did the NBA make a mistake by carrying on with games last night?
Yeah, I don't think so. And these decisions are really easy to kind of reflect upon and you know, in the rearview mirror. I think it was important for all these athletes to be able to pay their respects in the way that they felt the most comfortable. I don't know necessarily that canceling all of the games would have made it easier for them to do that. I think in some ways, I mean, Kobe was a very public figure, and I think it may have been better for the public, you know, maybe not necessarily for the players themselves, but better for the public to be able to see, and particularly Kobe's fans, to see the kind of the kind of respect that other players had for him. And I think the one thing you could say about Kobe, for a certain generation of fan and the players that are currently in the league, Kobe was their superstar. And Kobe came to be, and Kobe was a very, very important figure in the history of the NBA, because he came about as kind of the quintessential, you know, guard superstar, not the lumbering center, not Shaq, not one of those other players, but he was that quintessential superstar that bridged the gap between Michael Jordan and the current wave of superstars that we have now. You know, and obviously it was Dwayne Wade and LeBron James and Steph Curry and all of these, you know, fantastic players who are very athletic and kind of seemingly kind of quintessential of what the NBA has become. Kobe carried the league on his shoulders for so long. And for a lot of the players who are playing now and a lot of younger folks of a certain generation, Kobe was the poster on their wall. And I think, it's easy to say whether they should or shouldn't play. I think in retrospect, I think it was fitting, and in some ways, this is probably the wrong word, but lovely and meaningful to allow people to see how important Kobe Bryant was to them. And I'd add one last kind of point to it. They always say that athletes die twice. They die. Their first death is when their professional career ends, and the second, obviously, is when they pass away. And I think what's so sad about Kobe's passing is that they happened in such quick succession. And for a guy that seemed to, you know, for all the conflicting, you know, stories of his time in the league, he really seemed to have it all together. And I think it was exciting to see that Kobe had a lot of potential to have a lot of positive impact in the second act of his life. And I think it's just very sad to see an athlete pass. And, you know, I mean, the closest analogy I can think of, and it was different because he was still current, but was Thurman Munson. And it just, you know, I think it just dragged at everyone a little bit.
Certainly a very sad sports day. Those of us who follow it won't soon forget. Dr. Keith Strudler is our WAMC sports commentator. I imagine you'll have some more thoughts on this in the coming days. And thanks so much for taking some time for us.
Yeah, absolutely.
To Walton. Here comes Kobe. Less than five from way outside. Got it! Oh, man! With 2.1.
All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Remember to stay subscribed for the latest from the Northeast. Thanks for listening. Till next time, I'm Ian Pickus.